This holiday season, we go shopping for Santa on Hearing Voices from NPR, the best of public radio. We spend this first half hour at the mall, City X, by Jonathan Mitchell.
What are you looking for?
I don't know.
How will you know when you find it?
I get this really funny, fuzzy feeling.
Once upon a time, they existed.
A middle American city.
It's in the middle of the Midwest.
Very conservative Midwestern town, great place to raise your kids.
To which I will refer as City X.
We wanted comfort.
I love that.
Sometimes I have to have it.
We wanted convenience.
I wish I had that.
Isn't that cool?
We wanted variety.
I think humans want lots of things.
They wanted bigger things. They wanted enclosed malls. And that was the trend. It was coming. It was what was going to happen.
City planning for the year 2000 AD.
Our first speaker is an architect of distinction, Mr. Victor Gruen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may take a pencil and figure out that the new millennium is only 44 years away. This might sound shocking, but I predict that in the year 2000, it will be considered just as foolish to take vehicles into the interiors of business centers as today that it is peculiar to put one's feet on the dining room table.
They used to say if you could stand on a phone book here, you could see all the way to Chicago. But where are we going?
We're going to the mall.
We're driving on the road to the mall, yeah.
And the traffic is always horrid out here.
It's the busiest street in the entire city because of the mall. And the businesses that have popped up around the mall because of the mall.
All these stores have sprouted up.
And it just all built up. It just everything cropped up around the mall.
The stone boxes.
They're all concrete boxes that are surrounded by parking lots and connected by roads. And there's no sidewalks anywhere.
It's all on land that used to be cornfields.
It's not the way it was. It's the way it is.
Well, I figured they could make more money if they sold the land and put stores on it.
That must have been progress.
I'm sure it's much more profitable than growing corn. There's plenty of corn.
Everything that you think is, well, this isn't going to be so good.
It's good for business.
It's an opportunity for somebody.
I don't know. In the larger scheme of things, maybe it is a problem. I don't know.
But what was couldn't have been.
Suburbia.
Freshness.
Edge city development.
That was the sign of the future.
The very future of who we want to be.
Metropolitan.
Younger, fresher, cleaner.
You know, what we have here is what we have, and
bam, it's all there. It's all there.
People were so ready for a mall to come here, and it
was just an untapped market.
You have to change with the times, and you have to figure out what people want.
Who wants to walk around downtown in the middle of winter? Nobody.
The mall offered a whole new range of national companies that weren't present in the community at that point in time.
Everybody will want to come to our mall now.
It was American. It was
metropolitan.
Metropolitan feeling.
Why are we the only town that doesn't have a mall in the United States? So when it came,
we were hip and happening. We were a real town. We weren't just some little spot in the middle of a cornfield. We've made it.
And it left such an enormous hole in the downtown.
I kind of like downtown like it was when I was a kid. You know, all the businesses were downtown.
For many years, the downtown had been the epicenter of retailing.
Older people don't like change that much. They'd like to have it just like it was.
Downtown was magical. People came down here on Friday night, and it was the hangout. It was the place where you came, where you had something to eat, where you shopped. And we felt with a great deal of pride that we were the leading department store in town. Started in 1886 on Fifth Street. My grandfather and his two brothers built this 10-story building at the corner of Fifth and Washington in 1925 and 1926.
I think that changed.
With the coming of the automobile. Edge city development, suburbanization, automobile culture, the moving outward.
It was the 60s, and the trend of the day was these new malls that were popping up everywhere.
Malls were being built, and we wanted to be involved.
The large department stores made a pretty quick exodus from the downtown to the new mall.
Because it was part of being in business and trying to grow your business.
The usual newspaper stories appeared decrying, you know, the loss of our downtown, our sense of community, and I think with some real basis.
We had heard these horror stories in certain towns where a mall had been built and the downtown stores had dropped its volume as much as 40%. Well, that'll put you out of business in a hurry. And we knew we were going to drop volume because some of the volume of the people that came downtown to the store were going to go to the new shopping center, obviously. So we calculated that it would be about 25%. Well, when it was all said and done, it was 100% because the store was eventually closed.
When I was 5 years old, I remember driving by the mall just to see its progress and seeing this huge...
And it was so huge.
This huge building.
This mall was just massive.
These huge forms. And I don't remember seeing anybody actually working on it, but I remember watching it and wondering what was going on in there because that time I didn't understand the concept of a mall. Okay, we are now driving around the mall. There's the Sears.
It looks like any other mall.
We're going to walk, go around the mall to the second level, and it's where the theater, we have a movie theater where the entrance is, but that's also the main drag into the food court.
People tend to have their favorite entrance. Even if the store that you're going to is far away, you always park up in the, you know, upper level by Bergner's because that's where you've always parked. And it's easier to get out, or, you know, they all have their motivation.
This is my favorite place to park because it takes you, bam, right into the food court.
My favorite place to park is actually the lower level near Bergner's. Yeah, because it's overlooked because it's actually sort of cutting into the hillside.
If I cannot find a good parking space, which it's not looking good.
There's hardly any parking places out here.
Then I go down to the lower level of Sears. That'll take me into the automotive section.
Just park anywhere.
Just park in the normal spot.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be open, but...
We are now in G9, upper G9. And, wait, is this a parking space? Because if it is, I'm taking it. Damn! Oh, I hate when that happens.
It's handicapped.
It's handicapped. What are you doing?
Well, here's... I'm sorry. I broke a law. You want me to drop you guys off?
We're going to have to park a long ways away.
It's not looking good, dude. Let's go down to Sears.
You can park right here.
What, you want to park here?
Oh, look, here's a parking place. Amazing. Well, there's always the possibility of a better one.
We're still only half a block away from...
I suppose so, but you know what? I walk nowhere. I don't. I don't walk anywhere. I drive everywhere I go. So for me...
But even when you're far away, you're still, like, you know, if you were downtown, you'd have to walk blocks, probably.
That's true, but you know what? I don't go downtown. Most people don't go downtown. You know why? Because the mall brought everybody here.
All right. Here we are.
Woo-hoo! We are at the mall. What are we going to do?
We just walk around and we look at the clothes and...
Time disappears.
Oh, that's nice.
And everything was shiny and new.
Restaurants and drugstores and movie theaters and...
Smiling clerks greet you.
Oh, that's nice.
And it smelled new.
Very orderly, very modern.
There's a place in the center of the mall that they call Center Court.
Can you meet me in Center Court?
Yes.
But, you know, it had skylights and it had trees growing inside, which was really bizarre. And
it was a good place to go look, just look around and you know, I was kind of like wishing, you know, you go there and you wish, I wish I had this, or when I get some money, well, maybe I'll come back and I'll get this. And we did a lot of wishing. Everybody did a lot of wishing.
That is cool. Isn't that cool? I love that. Isn't that cool?
What are you looking at?
Yeah, it's right here. I always want to stop here and look at it. I'm like drawn into the store.
It's got shiny objects.
That's exactly it. It is. It's got shiny objects. Look at that. Isn't that cool? How much is that?
I never did like the mall. Never did care about it. The only time I went to the mall was to take people there. I was driving a city bus. It's a brand new place. And I was new at the bus company, so I had to take the worst runs, and that was the worst run. We used to leave from downtown at the Kmart, and there was only one bus an hour. And we, on the way to the mall, you couldn't stop and pick anybody else up because it was so crowded. So people would just watch you go by. And then when you got to the mall, buses all full up going back to town. And that's the way it was all day.
I guess it became the place to go for shopping, for entertainment, for just that sort of teenage adolescent lingering around kind of thing.
There's a lot of young people in here. I'm standing here looking around. I could be the oldest one here.
Look right over there.
A lot of kids.
Look at the way they're kind of walking. They kind of got the little twitch in their hip, and their hair is kind of bouncing a certain way, and their eyes are darting back and forth.
The eyes.
And they're looking. You would walk around in search of boys.
When you're of a certain age, the mall is the place where you find your freedom.
That was where everybody went.
Looking for boys and clothes and whatever else you could find. And
traveled in little tribes around different locations in the mall. And
look for girls. That's it.
Like this group of guys here, they all have stocking caps all pulled down like over their eyebrows.
Some guys following us around.
Yeah, I stalk them. So all you girls out there, watch out now. I'm just playing.
We'd all act like we were cool and we really didn't want them to follow us, but
yeah.
You know, that was the whole reason why we were there, was for them to follow us.
Have you ever found a girl here?
Yeah, a few times.
I don't know, like, you'll be in line, they'll ask you something, and then they'll just start talking to you.
Be myself, that's all you can be.
Do you come with your friends?
Yeah, actually, my friends are right there. They're eating, they're getting food. So
we came in here to eat.
I haven't eaten today.
We're coming into the food court.
Okay, we have roasted chicken, we have Fila's, Euros.
Look, they have a Subway over there.
Mandarin Express, McDonald's, Mellow Cream Donuts, A&W, pizza, and the Great American Steak Company.
Like, if everyone in your family wanted a different meal.
Are you going to have a hot dog?
I don't think I'm going to have a hot dog.
You're not? Why?
Because I have that choice.
Are you going to eat?
I'm going to have a gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro?
A gyro.
A gyro. I'm going to have one of those. What's the mall smell like?
Popcorn. Popcorn and candy. Mm-hmm. And perfume.
Perfume and really sweet fast food.
Scented candles. That's another one.
Fake cinnamon.
Yeah. And then if you walk in a clothing store, it smells like new clothes. Let's go by and have a whiff of coffee there.
I met people by working there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everybody that I knew, all my friends, worked at the mall.
And I became the assistant manager and acting manager. Thank you very much.
I think what there was a food chain related to where you worked. And, you know, you started working at McDonald's or one of those god-awful kiosks in the center that sold, like, you know, barbecue paste. And then you'd work your way up. And I got to the point where I was the guitar salesman in the music store, and I worked in the CD shop as well. So that was probably the coolest I've ever been.
Okay, where should we go from here?
We have a photo booth. We could get our photo taken at the photo booth.
Oh, look, there's a Zoltar machine.
And a Zoltar machine.
That's new.
Yeah, that is new. It's got the genie and the ball that's flashing there. And do you have a dollar?
Do I ever? So, I think you press the button that's your sign.
Okay, I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to the mall. My name is Zoltar. Let's see what your fortune is today.
Oh.
What happened?
It's popping out.
A card's popping out of the bottom here.
Okay.
Be flexible enough to see the future, to see that the future can be something different than it is.
Your calm spirit will see you through emergencies.
Trends come and go.
The elephant is your special animal.
And we want quick answers, but it's not a simple thing.
Where should we go from here?
If you can see that things can change and that you can survive and that they can be better.
Play again and I will tell you more.
Oh, you know where we should go?
Where?
The perfume department.
The perfume department.
I'm a beauty advisor is my actual title, so like when people come up, I tell them about like color and that kind of thing, and then sell makeup, basically.
Do you do makeovers?
Mm-hmm. I don't really like working at the mall. I would come to shop, and that used to be fun, but now I just feel like I don't want to even come here anymore because I have to come here all the time to work. Most people are rude. I used to think most people were nice, but most people are rude.
There was a part of working at the mall that I didn't like. I didn't like the idea that I couldn't look outside windows and see what was going on outside. I was stuck inside of this cave.
The mall is, I don't know, it's pasty. It's just, it's sunless and windowless and...
immaculate.
Sterile.
That sort of hermetically sealed mall type of environment, that corporate street.
A really safe environment where there's security all the time.
Very orderly, very modern.
It gives you a place to be inside.
You don't have to get out in the cold or the heat.
What is a mall but a large cocoon keeping the world out?
They're too...
generic.
And there's nothing unique about them anymore.
It's sort of a homogenous experience where if you go to almost any mall in the country...
any mall in any town in any state.
Every mall in every place in every town is...
Gap, 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 gap.
It's very similar by design. Maybe there's comfort in that.
Our city, I think, has a lot to offer people. But basically, people talk about the mall. People are going to the mall. People are talking about what they bought at the mall.
You know, what we have here is what we have. And
if you want things, that's where you have to go to get them.
Anything you ever wanted is inside of a mall.
Well, I met my wife at the mall. When I was cool, we would get off work at 9 o'clock, because that's when the mall closed. And... we would hang out in the parking lot at the mall, and we would make jokes about how the full moon was beautiful and shining off of the windshields of, you know, the 88 Buick. And sometimes we would ride in my convertible around the mall parking lot. And you know, despite all of the problems and cultural homogenization, it's still a pretty fun memory.
Do you go to the mall very often?
Not so much these days.
How come?
Getting older, realize that life isn't about all that things, I suppose.
I've learned a little bit more about what I like, and it's not necessarily what everybody likes, and that's what you find at the mall, what everybody likes.
But I do like clothes, so when I go to the mall, I walk by and say, ooh, that's cute!
I get this really funny, fuzzy feeling.
And sometimes I have to have it.
I think humans want lots of things. And I think some are good for a society and some are not so good for a society. And we make those choices based on what's available. Now, it's interesting in the history of retailing in the 19th century, actually, before the development of the great department stores, most shopping was done in small regional areas, neighborhood grocers, and so on. And as it became centralized, a group of merchants in Chicago brought suit against the stores like Marshall Field's and others as an unfair competition.
Well, some people get left out, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. It's just the way it is.
Obviously, that didn't keep Marshall Field's and other large department stores from prospering. And we began to think of our downtowns traditionally as the center of our community.
Cities are a living, breathing, changing entity. Right now, malls are going through a very difficult time.
Now, these many years later, the mall has spawned so many other big box stores.
And perhaps the bigger threat are the big box stores. So it's nothing new. This is the way that cities live or die.
And maybe, you know what, maybe if we never got the mall, maybe our city would just be this small little town that had nothing, not even a mall.
And I think what's significant here is we not only look at history as something that's 100 years old or 10 years old or even 1 year old, we look at history as happening today and in the future.
Where are we going? What are we going to do? What are we reaching for?
Well, the world is moving pretty fast, and as you get older, it even seems to move faster.
Trends come and go.
We decide as a society the things that are good for us.
If you can see that things can change and that you can survive and that they can be better.
Is it better? I'm not sure it is. But that's the way it is.
Our city, I think, has a lot to offer people.
It's a really nice place to live.
It's easy to buy a house.
It's a nice size city.
Fairly easy to make a living.
I think it's a safe place.
And the cost of living is very reasonable.
It's really a great place to raise a family.
It's the middle of America. I think that's a good thing.
Fits my tastes perfectly.
You're probably going to find its beauty in the people.
Be myself. That's all you can be.
It's the people. And I think, by and large, we have a community full of wonderful, wonderful people.
But while I think that people shape the town shapes the people.
The question is, do these people look happy that they're here?
Do you think they do?
I don't know.
She didn't look too unhappy.
No, I think they look pretty happy.
It's just fun to see our country be our country and our people be our people. And what better place to do it at the mall?
That's producer Jonathan Mitchell's History of City X, The Mall, and its creator, architect Victor Gruen. Coming up in a minute, some seasonal spirits and sonics from Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
This next half hour, Hearing Voices presents Tis the Season, produced by Jen Allison.
A gathering of days, an American holiday sampler. For Christmas and the winter holidays, here's Tis the Season, produced by Jenna Allison.
Now here we are still, the day before Christmas, and we have... Jenna? Would you talk to me for a minute, please?
No.
Hey,
no.
Listen, do you want to sing with me?
No.
Do you want to play the piano?
No.
Want to sing Silent Night?
No.
Well, that's a very cooperative little girl. Makes your daddy proud. Now listen.
Christmas to me is like when your whole family gets together, and I really like games with my dad because I hardly ever see him.
When I get together with my grandparents, it's sort of like a family reunion, and I feel like I'm just sort of, I belong to a 27-person family, with including my pets.
I just think it's really fun to see the people that I don't usually get to see.
The most fun is when our family is all together Christmas Eve. That's the greatest joy of my life.
Branches, It's so horrible to spend Christmas by yourself in our society that there's no way that you can do that. There's no way that Christmas can just become another day. Everything tells you, the television, the radio, the newspapers, the stores, the people on the street, everybody's telling you it's Christmas and you better have a family to go to and you better be really happy because it's Christmas.
I believe we need the midwinter holiday because it is the end of a cycle. There is, I think, some concrete part of all of us that wonders if it's ever going to start up again. So I think there's that need in the midst of a long cycle of darkness to be reassured that life can spring up again. And we get together to affirm that, I think.
The winters came too early and stayed too long. And then when finally the sun became, you know, stronger and the days became longer and the snow started to melt, it was like being liberated.
I don't like it when it gets dark really early in winter because, you know, I can't stay out and play baseball or do handstands or cartwheels or roundoffs or back.
The frost became thicker and thicker and you couldn't see through the window at all. So I would take a coin and I would press against it and make a little peephole. And I could look through it to see the world outside through this little peephole. And I saw nothing but white, white, white. Nothing but snow and sky.
Well, it's an interesting thing about the winter solstice and the celebration of the winter solstice. It is celebrated by all the cultures of the world. Even in Japan, they celebrate the winter solstice. And we look out on the ground, and we look out through the windows, and we see that everything's dead out there. And then we do know, as spring comes, that maybe things weren't just dead. Maybe we were sleeping.
In winter, bears hibernate, and leaves die and fall off the trees. And when I look out at the snow, it seems like everything's dead there, but really there's something under it, I know, freezing to death, waiting for spring to come.
For me, the winter solstice is the beginning of the seasonal holidays. It's the time when the night is the longest, the day is the shortest. And in that long period of darkness, what we're actually celebrating is the beginning again of the cycle of light.
Light is returning.
Light is returning.
I think maybe people use lights and other decorations kind of like a lantern for the darkness since the days are so short. Christmas tree lights, the menorah, and candles, they're all like a lantern, kind of.
When I was a kid in Minnesota, we used to go driving looking at all the lights because people would do these amazing things with their homes and their yards with their Christmas lights. And I presumed that the more lights you had on your house, the richer you were. We would drive for hours all throughout the suburbs of Minnesota looking for these houses with lights. That was great.
I can always tell it's Christmas, even if I don't look on a calendar. Just the way people act, the feel of it, you know. I see Christmas ornaments for sale, I see friendly people, and everything on TV is like, buy so and this or that, or for your friend, or now this Christmas specialty from McDonald's, Peppermint Sundaes.
I remember my families were in the retail business, so it was a great time of happiness, because that's when they did most of their trade. But it was sort of like a fairy tale time when this fairy figure could bring gifts to children, and there was a spirit of giving and goodwill.
So it was a folk custom, a folk tale. It was just part of the times, and people did nice things, and they were happy.
Oh, we're at St. Andrew's Church in Oakland. There's going to be a dinner here starting at 12 o'clock. They'll be feeding over 1,000 people and giving away bags of food.
I don't know why I'm volunteering, actually.
You do know why.
Why am I volunteering?
Eat more food. Spirit. Christmas spirit.
Christmas,
you got spirit. Christmas spirit.
I got Christmas spirit.
This guy got Christmas spirit, too.
Christmas and Thanksgiving, we have lots and lots of good volunteers. However, that's only 2 days out of the 365, and we feed folks the rest of 363 days, so people are hungry all the time.
Merry Christmas, darling.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, baby.
We have a Christmas party to thank the employees and staff
for the year that they put in for us. People talk to each other that probably don't talk to each other all year long, and you have good food, and it's kind of a closing to the year.
Let me see, who's drunk a lot tonight? See those two guys over there in the white shirts? They like to talk. They really do. They drink a lot. They love to drink.
We would make the rounds after Mass. We'd go say hello to Miss Capper, Mr. So-and-so, and they all had a little shot for you, Christmas cheer. Well, the first couple of years, I didn't quite make it home, and I can remember Francis walking me up and down the cold Denver streets there, trying to sober me up. You remember walking me, huh?
Yes, I do, Pop. Two times.
I realize that it is Children's Day, as far as I'm concerned. It's the Children's Day.
Merry Christmas. Here we are, Christmas morning, December 25th, 1954. Gathered around the living room are Mummy, Daddy, J.J., and Pepper. Jenna's still upstairs asleep. It will bring her down in just a few minutes. Now we're sitting on the floor opening our stockings. And here's James Waters Allison III. Merry Christmas, Jay.
Merry Christmas, Daddy.
What do you have there?
We celebrated Santa Claus time. Christmas was just a time when other people had glittery lit up Christmas trees that we didn't have. But I always hung up my stocking. When I was a little girl, I lived in an apartment house in New York, and I'd hang my stocking up on the broom closet in the kitchen because I think it was the only place I was allowed to put a tack in. And then I'd go to sleep knowing that Santa Claus came in through the fire escape.
Well, anybody who lives in the city knows that.
That's right. I mean, there's no other way.
You come through the fire escape.
Hi, sweetheart. What's your name?
Carnita.
You have to speak up.
Carnita.
Carnita. That's a pretty name. You've been a good girl this year? What you want for Christmas? Oh, you just want some candy for Christmas. Okay, let me talk to you. Is this your sister?
Her name's Yada.
Yada?
We would put out a plate of cookies and a glass of beer for Santa Claus every Christmas Eve. And the next morning, we'd go down, and of course, it would be gone. And also, as we were going to sleep on Christmas Eve, just as we were drifting off, we would hear sleigh bells out on the roof. So my parents really loved the Santa Claus stuff. They really loved to get us all excited about it. And I think it was because they wanted us to have a real sense of magic. But they also got a lot of mileage out of the behavior modification aspect.
Okay, let me tell you something. You be a good girl and do all your homework. Make your parents very proud of you, okay?
Mm-hmm. We had problems, you know, convincing the child that, no, we didn't buy that. Santa Claus is going to bring that. And we did seem to be convincing to ourselves, anyway, that we had pulled a little hoodwinking, you know.
We would always get presents from Santa Claus, but it was always in my mother's handwriting.
And Santa Claus brought my sister and me a ball, and it had our names on it. And I was always in wonder that Santa Claus would know my name and would have time to write it on the ball.
We never told him ourselves that Santa was other than what he was, and I guess that old story about Virginia, the little gal wrote to the editor of I think it was the Sun. Anyway, she must have idolized the guy. Why a child would idolize any editor is beyond me, but she asked him, knowing that he was a truthful man, if he would tell her the truth about Santa. And I don't remember the rigmarole he gave her, but he convinced her that there was a Santa Claus. And as long as she knew in her heart there was a Santa Claus, I guess there was a Santa Claus.
What's your name?
Shantae.
Shantae, that's a pretty name. How old are you, Shantae?
5.
What did you want for Christmas, Shantae?
Santa Claus was just so magical to me. My whole world was sort of constructed around this magic, that there was this magic in the world.
And what else?
And so when that was no longer true, I was totally devastated. My life crumbled.
I still think there's a Santa Claus. It seems to me that this business of analyzing Christmas and of debunking elves and things like that is no good for anybody. I think we lose a great deal. The magic and the fantasy I think most of us need a lot of that.
Well, I'm gonna get out my Christmas list for you. Like, instead of just having a mental Christmas list, I just turn on the computer and there it is. Well, I print it and then my mom sends it to people. Scooter, wooden wagon, plantsters, jammer, ice skates, a check for $96, $20 to make a playhouse, makeup such as orange or clear lipstick, metal detector, movie soundtracks.
Oh, you know what I would do? I would open up the presents and then I would wrap them back up. I couldn't wait till Christmas morning.
My mother was the kind of person who loved high drama in her life, so she would always go way into debt at Christmas trying to provide us all with everything that she thought we needed. So there would be stacks of presents around the Christmas tree when we came back in the door from church to open the Christmas presents. But somehow there wasn't anything that I wanted in those gifts.
Buying presents for kids is so complicated.
I know.
And you know what's so hard? Because my sister, my mom never knows what to buy for her, you know?
Yes. Now I can see why the parents are so tense.
Aaron to the service area, please. Aaron to the service area.
Come on, you guys, stay along the lines. I don't know what I was. Must have been crazy to come even stop here with these guys. I must have been out of my mind. I don't know what I was. Had a sane thought in my head. It wasn't thinking. I was just, and now I came in here and I really don't know what I was thinking.
Could you picture Shannon?
Yeah, that little kitchen is too much.
Folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows something's turkey and some mistletoe.
My favorite part is probably trimming the tree because you get to see all the old ornaments from my mom and dad when they were little.
It was a regular tree. It was a real tree, what it looked like. And we decorated made our own decorations, and we got things out of the woods to put on it, didn't we? Holly didn't cost us anything and all that. We had everything that you have to pay for nowadays. We got it free of charge. We didn't have to buy it.
They say it was joy going out and buying a tree, but to me it was a headache. A lot of the trees, I had to buy extra branches, and I drill holes in the trunk and shape the limbs and force them in to give us a nice full tree. I tie strings in amongst the branches to hold the branches up and shape them so that they would look halfway decent.
Now we have an artificial tree. Dad bought it for me about 17 or 20 years ago. And we have a snow machine.
This plastic tree, I put one goes here and two goes here, and they're all color-coded. I know where the branches all fit. The tree, to me, looks almost as good as the day we bought it. And anyway, after you get all that junk on, you can't see much of the tree.
And then we'd put the ornaments on. And everybody would do that, and we had this ornament that looked like a rotten pomegranate, all covered with tarnished, I don't know, tinsel or something like that. It had been my great-grandmother's. It was incredibly old, and it was the ugliest thing you had ever seen. And traditionally, it always went at the back of the tree, at the bottom.
So can he put ornaments on you?
Ornaments are magical anyway. I just love Christmas trees and ornaments because they're just these little miniature, like, toys. You know, it's like hanging toys all over a tree.
They were like clusters of grape, purple grapes, and there were violins.
These are the ones here that I have made that have the word Noel and joy and a Christmas tree and a candy cane. And I collect angels, so most of my angels are in here and over in that part.
I still have things our children made us in elementary school. We have big Santa Clauses we blow up. My mother gave me she gave me a snowman that you blow up, first blow it up. And I've still got it in it. I blow it up every year.
Dad did the tinsel. Nobody else was allowed to do the tinsel. He had to do the tinsel. I guess he thought we would sort of run rampant with it all, and he wanted to very artistically place it all around the tree. There were five kids, and we all wanted to put the tinsel on the Christmas tree, but the way we'd put tinsel on the Christmas tree is the way most kids do it, by just throwing globs of tinsel on the tree. And she would painstakingly take each glob of tinsel and separate all the tinsel and put it on strand by strand, the whole time screaming at us that we didn't know how to put tinsel on a Christmas tree.
We'll put this on first, and then we'll get it right.
No, that's not the way to do it.
Yes, it is, because...
No, because then when you try to straighten it, everything's going to fall off of it, Baron.
Nothing will fall off. But if I put this on and it's all out of balance, then when I...
You're about to step on the lights.
Christmas Eve, I go to my grandparents' house. I have rice pudding and see whoever gets the almond gets out of this pig. And I tried eating it once and I almost threw up.
Well, it was always a dinner, a Christmas dinner. We had a little thing of turkey, ham, plenty of fruit, nuts and things. But we gathered our fruit and nuts ourselves back then, mostly. We had a jolly time.
They gave quite a number of them, and they're very good. The music used to be fine, but today it's all trash.
We had a menorah, and we lit candles, and you light one each night with the Shamus candle. And each child had a turn every night until the 7 or 8 days were over. And then we thought we should do a little something more before we exchanged gifts. So we all held hands and we danced around in a circle singing, "Oh Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah." No, we didn't. No, we didn't. That's wrong. The first night of Hanukkah. The first night of Hanukkah. Hannah, Hannah, cuckoo, Hannah, Hannah, cuckoo, the first night of Hanukkah. The Hanukkah dance. The dog would join in. I mean, it was really a riot scene.
Domino would bark and shout and.
My granddad always played piano in the living room at Christmas. One year. Well, the last year he was alive, they let him come home from the hospital at Christmas and he played piano. And he went back into the hospital afterwards, and shortly after that he died. And I had no reaction to it. I never ever mentioned his name again. I never said anything about him. I just carried on living, The next Christmas came and we were having the usual family gathering and everybody was partying merrily away and drinking and having a good old time. I turned around and I suddenly looked at the grand piano all closed up, and I suddenly burst into tears, and my mother came over to me and said, "What is wrong? What's wrong?" And I said, Granddad's dead. And she said, "But he's been dead for a year." I really miss my family around Christmas time. That's the worst part. I put on a Nat King Cole record and I can be right back in the middle of my family, and I'm remembering all these wonderful things. Sometimes I get so sad that I just wish I were back with my family at age 5 again, just back in that little world, which didn't really exist.
Well, all kids look forward to Christmas time because you hear those fantastic stories about Santa Claus. He's coming and he's riding his reindeers, and you'd sit down and write letters and, make out a long story. You want this, that, and the other, and sometimes you're disappointed you didn't get it. And I remember one Christmas that I wrote a long letter about a bicycle and a wagon and all this kind of thing, and I didn't get that.
I remember I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I wanted a record called Mañana. Mañana, mañana, mañana is good enough for me. For some reason, I really wanted that record, and my mother got it for me, and I was just thrilled that I had gotten something that I really wanted for Christmas, and I had the record out of its sleeve, and I had it sitting on the couch, and I was so excited that I started jumping up and down, and I sat on the record, and I broke it. I will never forget hearing the record snap underneath my butt. I will never forget that.
Hey, Laura, what did you get?
I want my present. Can I?
Just a minute.
Which is mine? This one.
Wait a minute, boy. Just a minute.
We were so full of anticipation, we were so excited, that there was really no way that the day was going to go like we wanted it to, that somebody, one of us kids, was going to have a nerve storm, and no matter how hard we tried to make it perfect, something was going to happen, and we were always sort of in fear of that moment.
Don't step on there.
Jana.
Jana. Gee whiz, be careful.
You're going to get a spanking in a minute.
Yeah. Oh, she didn't mean to do that.
Well, I told her mellow up 15 times. Now,
everybody thinks that at Christmas something magical is going to happen, and that either the baby Jesus or Santa Claus or our family is going to somehow be able to magically understand our deepest desires, even though we don't have a clue as to what our deepest desires are.
Finally, I open a present tonight, and then I'm all, oh, shucks, I wish I had more presents to open up tomorrow, and then I feel guilty that I just want to open up all those presents. I'm all bored. I'm all, what am I going to do? All my toys are almost old, so.
And then I go to bed, and I wake up the next morning, and I think, oh, I'm going to open up presents. I'm going to open up presents. And I just think that I'm going to open up more presents for some reason. Then I go out and I see the tree and there's no presents underneath it. And I just feel so depressed. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm depressed. I'm supposed to be happy. It's right after Christmas.
There's all this anticipation, seasonal feeling about this holiday. And then then all of a sudden it's the day after Christmas. And it's the same ornaments and the same tree. And it's the same season, it's only a day later, but all of a sudden the feeling changes. Everything loses its magical quality.
It's an enormous birthday. At least in our culture, it's a celebration of life in the midst of winter. And the children are singled out as really kind of the symbols of this life. And then when you add that to the whole culture, I mean, we're advertising Christmas and children and gifts and getting what you want for months before the event. It's surprising to me that more people aren't wiped out by, you know, not getting what they think they ought to get at that time of the year.
When Christmas comes, I'm like so excited. You have a feeling of Christmas is coming. But then, like, when it's over, like, it just, the excitement dies down. It's just all boring around the house sometimes. You just moping around, and we'll say, well, I hope the next Christmas is better.
Ever since I grew up and moved out of my parents' house, my mother has always sent me a little care package around Christmas time, filled with little individually wrapped stocking stuffers, so that I can stuff my own stocking and maintain that family tradition we've always had. So Christmas Eve comes and I stuff my stocking, and the next morning I go down and lo and behold, my stocking is all stuffed for me. So my mother called me last year and said, you know, Jenna, you're getting too old for this. It's too much money. I can't do this anymore. And I nearly fell apart. I said, but Mom, I'm only 36. I've always had my stocking. You've got to send me my stocking. I just hope that she reconsiders by next Christmas, because otherwise I don't know what I'll do.
We gather by the phone now. I mean, everybody phones, and so we haven't lost the family part of it.
Sure, we'll get a Christmas tree. And I'll go out and buy presents for everybody and wrap them up, and I'll do just what my mother did. I'll try to get as many presents under that tree as I possibly can so that everybody can at least expect to have a great Christmas, even though I know that on Christmas Eve when we open all the presents and after the living room is completely filled with wrapping paper from all these presents, that everyone will sit there with kind of a sad little feeling in their stomach that it just wasn't what they expected it to be.
But I'm going to put my Christmas trees up this week or next week. I'm going to put my lights up at the window and put my wreath on the door and hang some things in the dining room. So I got some crepe paper in there. I'll sit down and make 4 or 5 strips and hang them across my dining room. It takes me back childhood. I'm 71 years old. I don't care. I still live it again.
Round yonder virgin, mother and child, holy infant, So tender and mild. Sleep in heavenly peace. Sleep in heavenly
A Gathering of Days is a series produced by Jenna Allison and Addie Gevins, with funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from KQED-FM in San Francisco and from Soundprint. Special thanks to psychiatrist Ray Poggi of Alta Bates Herrick Hospital and John Langstaff, who is the creator of Christmas Revels. Thanks also to Addie Gevins and Catherine Stifter and to Peter and Barbara Allison for the Allison Family Archival Recordings.
I want to do it first, like we wish we Merry Christmas. 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 And happy to you. Good tidings for you. For you and your kid. Good tidings for Christmas. And a happy new year. Now bring us some sticky pudding. Now bring us some sticky pudding. Now bring us some sticky pudding. And bring it right to you. We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some. So bring it right to you. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And happy to you.
Eli Boggs, age 3, with his dad Jesse Boggs on guitar. I'm Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices, wishing you lots of holiday spirits and prosperos años nuevos.
National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.